great day, amazing humans. Welcome to the Empowered in My Skin podcast, where we have conversations that inform, inspire, and remind you that you matter. This is the place where we share stories, wisdom, and experiences designed to help you live boldly, think empowering thoughts, and show up fully in the skin you're in. I'm your host, Nkechi Nwafor, and I'm so glad you're here. Now, let's get into today's episode. Great day, amazing humans, and yes, welcome to another episode of Empowered in My Skin, the podcast, and we have a very interesting and amazing guest. I know for all you YouTubers, you're looking at him, and for anyone that's on audio, they're like, who is it? And I'm going to let you know. Well, what if strength had, and this is a question for everyone, what if strength had nothing to do with shrinking yourself, punishing your body, or proving your worth? What if it was about trust, longevity, and owning your power without apology? And so today's guest is here to challenge everything that you think you know about fitness and self-discipline, and no one better to do this than the amazing, the incomparable, give him a big, gigantic podcast welcome to Andrew Coates. Yeah!
Most podcast intros aren't that enthusiastic, so a pleasure. It's a pleasure to see you, and the last time we saw each other, we were on a panel together at Canver Pro Global in Toronto last summer.
And you became my ginger friend ever since.
Yes.
So with every podcast, I ask the same question. What has been your most empowering thought that you've had of the day so far?
Oh, God. I struggle with these kind of things because I don't know if I fluctuate on these generally empowering thoughts all the time. And I'm gonna come sideways, right? Mm-hmm. I think there are people like yourself who just radiate this big positive energy, and I think it's infectious. And I think there's a lot of people who are probably a little more, almost like, let's say, even keel. Mm-hmm. And my day, I'll get out of bed, and I'm getting better as I get older at little things like, my aunt bought me a really nice pair of slippers for Christmas, and I slide them on it. And I don't take for granted the fact that there's just something, it's a neat little piece of comfort, because how often do we have these little comforts, these little things in our lives? And after the first moment you have them, you completely take them for granted and they become your routine. So I practice every day, every morning. So yesterday, my poor cat, he's 14 years old. He had to have a vet visit. I'm carrying him down the stairs. He is crying and he is starting to urge to vomit. So cat projectile vomit all over my hardwood, which is way better than A, the shoes that were just beyond it, or B, the carpet that I was on the stairs, or me. So I somehow managed to be fairly accurate with this cat in my arm. So that was a big mess to clean up. So great. But there's some other stuff. I think he'd eaten some flowers that he shouldn't have. So guess what? Vet visit. So I'm worried about it, right? He's 14. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he came back okay. So I'm grateful for that. But every morning for the last little while, he's gotten this thing where he gets up on my tall boy dresser and he wants to nuzzle face to face.
My tall boy dresser,
the taller of, your bedroom dressers, right? Okay. So he's up at eye level. And so he wants to, like, headbutt and like softly and just nuzzle and just and I will get up 5 minutes extra in the morning. So that way I have the time just to kind of do that with him. Okay. Those are like those perfect little moments that I will cherish in the day. And then I'm not rushed, but I have a full day of clients. So if anything, it's actually a little bit less about me and it's more about, because I'm still a full-time in-person personal trainer, despite all the other sort of media and things. And that's the best part of my work, and all the other ideas for everything else comes out of that. So that's kind of how I tend to function and think, if that makes sense. And I don't know if there's, every once in a while you get a high point where someone comes in and they're just absolutely fucking radiant because, they've gotten great news from the doctor or whatever. But like, that's the stuff I tend to live for. Does that make sense? I know I've gone completely sideways.
No. Actually, I want to actually say to you, because it is exactly the way I think. So a lot of people think I live on the side of optimism. I am pretty much an optimist. I like to say that. But I also recognize there's more value in applying intelligent thinking than positive thinking. So I try to not think worse or better than a certain situation is, right? So, and then that's what keeps me like able to like sustain sort of this level of energy. But the truth is one of the last things that you just said is exactly what I think I was getting at. Empowering thoughts are never for yourself. They're actually for somebody else. Because the empowering action is, you have the thought, but it actually creates this domino effect that then help somebody else somewhere down the line through the day.
Yeah. And to take a piece of that and run with it a bit, and I don't think there's no value in positive thoughts. I think positive thoughts are extremely potent, but I tend to default to the mindset of bias towards action first. Mm-hmm. And I do think that sometimes some of the kind, positive energy that you'll see on social media, these short pieces of witticism that make people feel good for the moment, they sound great. Mm-hmm. But it's the, God, there's a Hormozy quote that I'm going to bastardize, but, you know, something about you're not successful, you don't get confident by, you know, saying affirmations in the mirror. You accomplish things by, and I know I'm distorting it, by generating an undeniable body of proof that you are who you say you are. Yeah. Well, and this aligns closely with some of the things that James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits. He gives it the best treatment where, you know, your actions, your choices are votes for the identity mm-hmm. that you want to create, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I tend to, positive energy, positive thoughts are wonderful. Mm-hmm. When people get into trouble is when they focus on that in the absence of acting on it. And then they wait for some sort of profound shift in who they are. They look for motivation when it would be a far more efficient path to not get caught in your own mind, caught in your own thoughts, to simply look at, all right, what's the most accessible, immediate, small action that can build momentum? Have you ever sat on the couch and gotten into a funk and you just had trouble getting off the couch? I mean, even I can where, you know, I'm watching, I don't watch much TV anymore, but I'll play video games that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you notice, like, I can't break the inertia.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes I'll have a low energy evening, but there are the times where I simply got off the couch and all of, mm-hmm. just the action of moving off the couch, all of a sudden my mental energy is different. My ability to
change your physiology.
Yep. And then so you think you scale that up with it's going and doing the workout, mm-hmm. going out and going for the walk, getting fresh air, et cetera. And it is quite transformational, even in its moment, let alone how mm-hmm. compounded workouts scale over time to change you, right, mentally, physically. And so if someone can actually bias towards that immediate action, mm-hmm. they tend to feel better. It tends to be rewarding that way. And then you're also generating that proof that, wait a second, I'm perfectly capable of doing this. Mm-hmm. And then if you string a little bit of it together, well, you see physical change, you see mental change. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to live in let's call it a victim mindset. Oh, the world is out to get me. It's all beyond my control. When you do things that generate proof, and then now it can shatter that victim mindset, because I think a lot of people, and I don't suspect the type of people listening to this podcast are caught in this trap, but we all know the people who are, they will avoid any effort or action that will shatter the illusion that they have about the world, yeah. which is that the world is unfair, they have no control in it, and it's much easier, it's ego and identity protective to say, well, I can't change my circumstance, I am a victim of my circumstance, because once you start generating that proof, it shatters it.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, you can look at yourself and go, wow, I had the ability to actually change this all along, which is very, very ego-threatening, right? So,
I love, and you know, it's interesting because something that comes to mind, and it was a conversation, so there's both a conversation I had today, and also, and today, by the way, just like to keep it, is January 20, we batch, so this is in January, end of January. And something I actually watched on the Diary of a CEO on their Instagram. So there was a gentleman, and he looks like to be a monk. I have not listened to the mm-hmm. episode. And he talks about how effectively, I'm going to bastardize this, but he was just really talking about how our mind works. So either you completely focus on something, and it's like there's a pendulum and it's going to swing, you're going to attract what it is, or you're trying to ignore it. And at some point or other, it's going to come back to you as well. He says the key is to don't touch the water. And when he said that, like, it gave me chills. So water itself is always calm. It is external forces that create the ripples that disturb the water. So he says the key to going to any goal is to not touch the water. He says when you're on that path to goal, don't like something relative to the goal and don't dislike something relative to the goal. Just stay on the path to get to the goal. Don't touch the water. And it just, like, it took me a while. Like at first I heard it, I had to listen to it a couple of times and then actually sit with it. But it's to me, it's like when you were speaking and I was thinking about, like, there's many times I'm on the couch and I actually find it hard to get up. And I realize in those moments is because I touch something that is contrary to the goal that I had. And it left me, it got me stuck or got me sort of like not in the inertia of the things that I do that get me, that propel me, you know? And the other thing that came to mind too, that people often ask, like, how do you get up every single morning and go to the gym and all this? Trust me, Andrew, you probably get this. And we're going to talk a lot about fitness and wellness today, but I don't do it because I feel like it all the time. I really just try to use like Brené Brown's, like, the 10 minutes I do is better than the 60 I don't. And I try to keep the feeling of what I know it feels like when I'm done at the forefront of my brain, right? Yeah.
I'll extend that a little bit. One of the most powerful tools I find for me to keep me on the path when it comes to fitness stuff, and I find it in particular with nutrition, is keep a very visceral idea of what it feels like after I do something or don't do something. Mm-hmm. So nutrition, my favorite example of this, for years and many, many years ago, if I'm in some sort of mall, there's always mall food court Chinese food. It looks great. It looks great. And hopefully people like me eventually learn the lesson that it's terrible. It is disappointing. And then once you've eaten it, first of all, you usually feel pretty, you've spent the money, you've wasted the calories on this stuff. Okay. And after a while, it became a visceral example to where I proactively would say, well, I'm not going to go near this stuff because for whatever reason, I had this temptation and no part of it was positively rewarding. It's not like I like Dairy Queen blizzards and I have one every Saturday after a lower body training day. And as long as I look forward to that in my week, it actually makes it very easy for me to say no to these other impulsive temptations because, you know, it's delayed gratification, but I'm like, hey, this treat is actually worth it. It fits into my calorie needs. I don't feel awful after I eat it, so I'm fine. And I don't know, maybe people are sitting there going, I've never done this, but we've all eaten the entire family bag of potato chips before. You've all done it, Con. Now, what are the first, you know, the first chip is magic. You know, the first 10, 15 are just absolutely magic. You get through halfway through the bag and you suddenly just, it's kind of mindless. Because what are we usually doing? We're not sitting there just focusing on it. We're watching television. There's probably some trigger of behavior that's routine that all of a sudden, like, the chips are in your hands and you didn't even, like, where'd these come from, right? It's so this automaticity to it. So, and there's the whole, like, if you can create a pause between stimulus and response, that's a good tactic with that. But let's even scale it out even more. For me, I love certain types of potato chips. I haven't had them in years. Why? Because the first thing I think of is, well, what do you feel like after you've eaten 3/4 of the bag? Now you're pretty, again, right? It's this awful feeling. And then it's this, well, there's not much left. I should finish it off. So half the time you finish off, half the time you set it aside. It's either way, it doesn't work out very good. So I'm just really clear on that. And part of it is if I go into the grocery store, you know, it's in the back of my mind that, okay, potato chips, I've equated with feeling awful. Now, it's not a treat that I value. So therefore, I'm not spoiling a treat that matters to me. I think I don't want to rob people of things that they truly treasure. But I actually think that most people eat on impulse a lot of pretty mediocre food. And if we're going to have the high calorie stuff, I want it to be worth it. So the way it feels special. And in my example with the Dairy Queen Blizzard for me, because I'm not eating a lot of impulsive stuff, and part of it is I also don't have it in my food environment in my home, so it's not easily accessible and I won't use food delivery apps, right? But because I'm on track with my nutrition, it meets my calorie goals, it meets my fueling goals, then I can enjoy that Blizzard guilt-free, shame-free. And now what do I think most people end up doing? during the week, their food environment, there's, let's call it junk in that space, okay? They can eat things on impulse, they can snack, the trigger response relationship. They don't necessarily feel good about it. They're struggling with their metabolic health goals, they're struggling with their body composition goals, and a lot of people are stuck in that place. So now what happens when something that you truly treasure, maybe it's kid's birthday, maybe it's a special event, dinner, and there are things that we all really love, we would love to be able to enjoy, but we've probably had too much of the stuff that's, I think, is fairly mediocre, not nourishing, high calorie. We're generally over on our calorie goals for the entire week. So then when it comes around to the thing that's meaningful, what ends up happening? When we have it, we feel shame. And if we feel shame, we've now tainted something that's actually like worth it and we physically enjoy, we should enjoy. So I want to get people clear on this. If you can kind of proactively, well, shape the food environment, don't have it around. Yes, that's a pretty classic fitness thought. But if you can also get really clear on, okay, here's all the things that I tend to, you know, if I'm walking through the grocery store, I'll have this, 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 but I don't feel that great after I have them, right? And there's often very complex emotional relationships with food that go way beyond a logical discussion. Like none of this stuff is necessarily easily logical, but if you can pre-decide hey, I really want to be able to enjoy this, you'll get to a point where you'll cut out and you probably won't miss a lot of these, again, this mediocre stuff. And whatever's mediocre to you, for example, I think that hot dogs are disgusting. The smell of them, I get nauseous. I think I'm Canadian, right? Poutine, I don't know where all the listeners are. I think poutine is disgusting. A lot of people think it might be your treat. It might be the thing you want to love the most. I think it's gross. That's easy for me. I won't go near this stuff. There's other things like the potato chips that I think, hey, I actually like that, but I don't tend to feel very good. In fact, it's not a deal breaker for me. I just don't need it. I'm fine. The Blizzard is the thing. It's a symbol for me that, hey, I get to enjoy something here, have a reasonable boundary, and I can enjoy it shame-free.
Mm. So I just want to go to nutrition because I fundamentally didn't plan to go there this year. But it is something that is like, I think it's getting worse, not better. Mm. I think even sort of the intelligence that you just shared actually made me stand up a bit, because even myself, who I figure you just gave me some tips in terms of ways that I can sort of adjust some of my eating. I love the whole willpower, like just have willpower once. So leave it at the store. Don't bring it home with you, because then you have to fight willpower a number of times. So people sometimes don't really think about that. But I want to go down the thing about like the foods that people commonly just pick up really, really easily. And what do you think people are still getting wrong about nutrition in this day and age? Because I think people are making food less at home. And now food is so expensive. So people are cutting corners, you know?
Oh God. I mean, nutrition is so complex. What really matters? I mean, number one is you have a lot of, let's use the word influencer as if it's a dirty word, which we all too often do. Mm-hmm. You have fitness influencers unqualified grifters walking through grocery store aisles, picking out random food and demonizing it. We have idiots throwing temper tantrums at things like breakfast cereal. Now, does that mean that we should be eating a lot of breakfast cereal? I mean, for some person, let's say the busy parent, and making sure that their kid has anything at all versus like having a bowl of cereal with milk, you know, I think some people get on a moral high horse with this stuff too. And I think it matters far more about the holistic, you know, what is the entirety of the body of what people are eating across their entire day and week versus one particular food. And if a child is otherwise being fueled, eating a lot of nutritious, healthy food, and breakfast happens to be cereal and milk, I'm not interested in moral judgment there. Do I think it's the best choice in that context? Sure, but there's so many more dimensions than just a black or white, let's do this versus like, let's, you know, scramble some eggs and give the kid oatmeal. But then you get these idiots in the grocery store else, this is part of the problem, saying that oatmeal is bad for you or spinach is fucking, like, when the hell did oatmeal and spinach become unhealthy for people? And the truth is they're not. And these people will grab onto and distort something. They'll talk about oxalates and other bullshit that they actually don't know. But then people hear this and go, oh my God. So it's people who, I'll go to a different direction with this. Consider the motives of the talking heads. And I like characterizing people as talking heads on social media. And this comes in many forms, but in fitness and nutrition, we see this. Yes, ethical, evidence-based, amazing, highly educated people with good messaging. Their goal is to reach more people. Their goal is to build brand. Their goal is to earn a livelihood in an industry. And that's, there's nothing ignoble about that. But on the flip side, there's a lot of people who are chasing status. It's an affliction in the fitness industry. They are playing the clickbait enragement game, which plays better on social media, right? And one of the best ways to do it is to pick, you know, random food on random store aisle, say something about it, why it's bad. And then it's not surprising when usually they're selling some sort of alternative version, you know, with a discount code in their bio, right? And it's nothing wrong with having reputable sponsors. I'm a podcaster. I have great sponsors. But I think it's wise to consider the motives of these people, right? And what are the, especially when it comes to nutrition, what are the educational qualifications of someone who is heavily branded around nutrition? And if they're an ex-bodybuilder who likes to swear a lot in social media posts, you know, is that really a great source of information? Someone who's literally throwing a tantrum at breakfast cereal all the time.
You, yeah, so you're an expert in this space. Who's somebody that you, and if you're open to share, who's somebody that you, you really value, like you would be a go-to that you can suggest?
I'm going to give you guys a handful because, I mean, I, you know, I'm uncomfortable with the word expert. I think I'm very well educated when it comes to nutrition. I've studied it a lot. However, my formal, now, I don't have post-secondary education nutrition, but yet I've learned from a lot of them. There is a, and I'm pretty sure she's a dietitian named Abby Langer, and she's Canadian. She is amazing. So she does a lot of this stuff. I think you're going to do great with Alan Aragon. Alan's background is a master's, I believe, of dietetics. I think it's his small education. Norton has always been a classically good, you know, figure when it comes to nutrition. He has his blind spots, but I like Lane. I've known him personally. We've spoken at events together. There are some great people in the UK. Very Danny Lennon. He's got a master's degree level education in nutrition. He's got a famous podcast called Sigma Nutrition Radio. It's been around way longer than I've been doing podcasts. Mind at the moment. So
did you, okay, I have to pause you. I'm not sure if it's your network or mine because I was moving. Did you notice at all any
disruption? It says my, it's saying that my internet connection's unstable, which is weird, but yes, it seems to be me.
Sorry. Yeah, after Norton you cut off.
Oh shoot, okay, so I'll start again. If you got it, you'll probably edit this. Dr. Lane Norton is, you know, generally speaking, pretty reliable when it comes to evidence-based nutrition. I mean, Lane, he's a good example of someone who knows how to play the social media game and be a bombastic and I don't think he's controversial. I think sometimes people treat him as such. But, you know, as far as the basics go, he's really good at fighting back against the charlatans and the grifters. So, and then there's a couple of guys. Danny Lennon in Ireland is fantastic. And Martin McDonald in the UK, again, they're just great. There's a long list of people you could follow, you know, for reliable, high quality nutrition information.
So, and I do want to say something because after meeting you at CanFit Pro, and one of the reasons I want to bring you on here is And I get, I think maybe because you did talk about education, I actually consider you like a life expert in this space, right? Like you are living it, you are doing it, you've been committed to it, you are interviewing, you also train, you also, and you have, what is it, 12, how many hours is it before you become like an expert, they say, 25,000, 12,000 hours or something like that, commitment?
So you... One half the answer is I've coached over 25,000 in-person personal training hours, right? And that obviously comes with nutrition stuff as well. And yeah, you're alluding to the famous 10,000 hour rule
that Malcolm Gladwell. Shoot, I can't even.
Malcolm sort of famously misinterpreted the original researcher Anders Ericsson. He wrote a book about it, and he sort of like contradicted some of the things that Malcolm said. But it's not as simple as. The bottom line, it's not as simple as just doing it. It also has to be fairly deliberate in your effort to learn and apply too. But either way, to your point, yes.
And I believe you have, I mean, just even just in this short little form. Anyway, so I just wanted to give you kudos. A little bit of backstory, because I do have a question around, you know, the years that you spent in the industry. But how did you get into the industry?
Oh, God. Shortish answer. I grew up playing sports, athletic. I was very lucky to have parents who were very progressive about...
Right? How long are you in Newfoundland for?
I was there until I was 28 years old. Okay, I moved across country to Edmonton. Right? So my parents were incredible about home-cooked meals. You know, they're way ahead of the curve on this stuff. They encouraged me and my brothers to participate in sports. I cross-country skied at a very high level, played basketball, a lot of other stuff, whatever I could get my hands on. Started lifting weights with a weight bench set in the basement when I was a teenager. Inconsistent, but mucking around with it in my early 20s in university. Got really serious with strength training, resistance training at 24 years of age. Transformed my body, transformed my life. And then I graduated with a Bachelor of Commerce degree from Memorial University of Newfoundland. So my formal education is there. Never envisioned becoming a personal trainer. Did various things. I've owned a nightclub along the way. I've worked in the bar business. My family's in the bar business. Dad is my brother. They own a neighborhood pub. I've done a lot of interesting stuff. I worked in casinos. But I moved across the country at 28, change of environment. And again, just consistently working out the gym, and then left another job that I just didn't see a future in. Mm-hmm. And the gym kept bugging me to come work there as a personal trainer. I kept saying no. All right. So I ended up starting a career in personal training at 32 years of age. Okay. So a lot of life experience, to your point. And just caught on with it fairly quickly. I did well to have clients renew, refer, you know, built up business. I became one of the busiest trainers in the company I worked for. Very quickly for a very long time before I left it about a decade ago to have my own business contracting a friend's gym. Mm. And that led to opportunities to start a podcast with a friend. It's now mine. Start writing for my own website, which got invitations to write for publications like Teen Nation, Muscle Fitness, Men's Health, a lot of the stuff we've heard of in the industry. And that led to paying attention to social media, which grew, public speaking opportunities, which obviously that's how we know each other. And I look around and go, well, this has all been great, but the whole way, it's always still been about the client in front of me. And I mean, for the listeners who are a bit more career oriented, and I mentioned earlier about the grifters who chase status, I think a lot of fitness professionals, a lot of trainers feel like they're supposed to grow out of actually coaching the person in person one-on-one. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to scale your business. You're supposed to, that's the advancement path. And I think a lot of people also are really, I met a lot who are hungry for status and they're unfulfilled unless they're on the podcast or standing on the stages. But, and they even think, I host a conference, I have a podcast, and I get a lot of DMs. I got an email today, you know, some guy is like, hey, I got a really great story. You know, I'd love to be a guest on your podcast. And I didn't know who this person is. I'm not familiar. And I can tell that in this particular context, the only person that would benefit from that would be this person to gain access to my audience. So, and I was like, no, I'm not interested. But what these people think is, well, if I get on the stages and if I get on the podcast, it's going to make me, I'm going to be validated. I will be considered an A-lister in the fitness industry, and therefore I will gain followers and I will gain business. But all of the people, you're in the position you are, you're speaking at these events, you have this podcast because of a career and a legacy of helping people. Mm. And then you're very savvy when it comes to the media side of stuff. Your personality is radiant. You're great with people, which then means that people want to invite you to go and be involved in these sort of things. Mm-hmm. And all of the people, my friend Lee Boyce, who, you know, we met him there in Toronto, or there's so many other authorities within the fitness industry. They get these invitations because they've been successful in their businesses for years, and they've been successful because they've taken great care of the client in front of them. Mm-hmm. And they've not been chasing status, and yet they've earned status because it's still a human thing that we desire and crave. I just do not believe it's a good guiding star. Mm-hmm. And invariably you tend to be rewarded if you're savvy. Savvy with media is a very powerful tool, right? But the people who are really savvy with media, who have credibility in the space, build it from having been very successful as operators within their businesses, whether that's, in our case, fitness or adjacent fields, or, you know, there's a lot of other people who are well known in the business world.
Yeah. You know, I love that you say that, because one of the questions I get so often is people reach out and they're like, hey, can you tell me how you became like a public speaker? Like, how did you... And I was like, you know, I never, and I love that, and I hope everyone that's listening to this, because there's also a lot of career folks on here, is like, your path was never linear. I think the question I might have for you is like, now when you sit back and reflect, do you actually see the true line? Because sometimes there's a true line that no matter what you did, it was always about helping people or something like that. But yeah, a lot of people will ask me, and I said, you know, I never set out to be a public speaker. I knew somewhere along the lines I had a message. And then I start to use my life to share that message. And then as a result of that, you know, people start to ask me to come and speak about the message, you know. But that's kind of, go on.
Mm-hmm. And I love something you said there, the message. What you didn't say was your story. Now, I'm going to have some fun here, because you will hear all the time people tell you, and whenever someone is asking to come on the podcast to speak at the event, they're saying, I've got a really great story. Now, this is a quote from my editor at Men's Health. This is going to sound harsh. Nobody cares about your story. Doesn't mean it doesn't matter. But in context, if you're looking for these opportunities, nobody cares about your story. Think about, what are the most read biographies? You know, who are some of the people whose biographies are the most popular in history? Go ahead, throw me a few.
Nelson Mandela.
He's one of them. Absolutely. Who else?
Gandhi.
Another one. Who else?
Sorry, I'm going to give you all the ones that I like have read, like Rosa Parks. But I'm going to read Martin Luther King. I'm going to think about Thurgood Marshall, JFK, Marilyn Monroe. Hers was phenomenal.
And two of the big, and these are all absolutely on that list. And two of the other big ones are Winston Churchill and Abraham Lincoln, right? Mm-hmm. Now let's add Arnold Schwarzenegger, Obama, right? Why? Because they are famous and successful, obviously in different contexts, right? They are, a lot of the people you just said are some of the most influential, important people in the entire world, whether it's directly political, human rights, you know, and in Arnold's case, you know, he's one of the most famous people in the world because he was first and foremost the most successful, arguably the most prominent successful bodybuilder of all time. Mm-hmm. He was a big part of making fitness mainstream. We're here in part because of Arnold. And then he went on to becoming one of the most bankable, visible movie stars of all time, and then turned around and became the governor of California, and so on and so forth. He's still very visible and relevant today, very charismatic. So here's the point. People are interested in their stories because they're successful and famous. It doesn't work in reverse. You have to, and a lot of these people, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, you know, they're of service to people. And yes, there's certainly a lot of narrative around them, and they ultimately did change the world in a very big way. But they didn't start out seeking status as much as they were of service to want to change lives, change circumstance.
They believed in a cause. I think they actually believed in a cause that was bigger than them.
Ultimately, yes. And so, and because of their impact, people are interested in their story retroactively, but it doesn't work in reverse. So for everybody who is leading with, well, I got a really great story. And again, it comes down to initially, nobody really cares yet. But if you focus your effort on impact and being of service and changing lives in whatever context that is, and that is a slow build, because the person who wants to get on other people's platforms with their story is trying to skip a lot of steps. Now, it's also not fair to gatekeep the process. I mean, I think if you're brilliant with media, if you develop relationships, sometimes you'll get opportunities that you may not feel ready for. And usually most of the people who in our world have had that experience. Mm-hmm. Part of the key is to say yes before you feel you're ready and to aggressively work on the skills mm-hmm. necessary. Mm-hmm. I tried to turn down my first invite to publicly speak, but my friend was insistent. So I dove in to make sure that I was going to be overprepared. It went well. That turned to other invitations and things exploded. Great. Awesome. I couldn't have expected it. I didn't ask for it. Now I look back and I enjoy it and I'm fulfilled by it. Wonderful. But even within my business, the public speaking minimally affects, if anything, my actual core business, my revenue, my livelihood. And I know we've gotten into something that was away from general fitness, but I think there's a lot of good lessons here.
I was just about to say that I'm actually enjoying this conversation. I might trash all these questions I have because I want to continue this dialogue.
I've got one more thing that I hope mm-hmm. will be helpful. Mm-hmm. And this will speak directly to personal trainers, but I think it's good for anybody mm-hmm. career-wise. Speaking at events, like I love speaking at the Canfor Pro Conference and all the other things I've gotten to do, but because I don't in any way meaningfully have something that I sell to other fitness professionals, then I don't directly get business. Mm. Certainly not an efficient path. Now, locally, yes, if some people are really searching and looking for a high profile reputable personal trainer, they see someone is educating on an international stage, that can be something they go, oh, I pick him over the trainer at the commercial gym. Okay, fair. Okay. But it's not a very efficient way to go about that. But what I tell trainers is don't seek these kind of stages. It doesn't pay mm-hmm. meaningfully, right? It's, if anything, it kind of takes you away from your business. I love being at them, so that's not a concern. But it won't put you in front of the people who will hire you. Right? And so what I know that people are seeking is I know that they crave status. So got to check that urge. Where to go with this is learn public speaking skills, mm-hmm. but go locally, volunteer, do corporate wellness speaking, mm-hmm. get in front of the local businesses, expand your network there, get involved in your local chamber of commerce. Mm-hmm. If you're struggling with public speaking, go do Toastmasters, work on the skill. And then what ends up happening is, as people see, and you could also, if you go do it, then you can have it filmed, document it, share it on your media. There's generating evidence that you're doing it, or more people will know that you have the skill. They'll want to involve you. Hey, would you be willing to come in front of my workplace? Look at your clients. Where do they work? Volunteer to go in and like talk for an hour, do a lunch and learn. Word gets around. And then all of a sudden this leads to corporate wellness speaking that actually pays quite well. Mm-hmm. And two, you're local to where the people who actually might hire you are. So mm-hmm. you're getting in front of potential clients. So it's actually a fantastic vehicle for referral business. Mm-hmm. And that compounds. And funny enough, as you document that stuff and gain the experience, it's the exact sort of thing that potentially could lead to these other bigger mm-hmm. stages. It's just mm-hmm. check the motivations, because all too often, and I've been at events where I've seen the overwhelming majority of people at these events are amazing, good energy. They're there to soak it up, to learn. I was that person for a long time, and I still do it. Mm-hmm. But I've been at events where someone is there and they're resentful mm-hmm. and upset because they're not on the stage and that no one is treating them like the A-lister that they crave being. And it's sad to watch. It's rare, but I've seen this mm-hmm. and it's very off-putting.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. So this has probably turned into more thought leadership than anything, but so I'm just two avenues to I want to double click on. So one is around storytelling, because I like what you have opened up in terms of my thinking around, because I actually like I will not go and tell somebody I have a story to tell. I typically say I know I have a message, and my message has been has actually just transcended, so I attract stuff.
I'm going to hijack for a sec. And again, story is about you. Message is for the other person. And you said storytelling. Storytelling is the most essential skill you can have in any form of media, what you're doing, right? Storytelling is one thing, but there's a difference between it always being about you and your story.
So that's what I was going to ask you. What's the difference between, like, it's hard to, like, let me just formulate this question for me because I had it in a minute ago, but
I'm so sorry.
When I think about telling my story, you know, people automatically think about storytelling, right? And so I often say, and especially in the world of, you know, I'm going to say in the diversity world, right? Like just being a Black human woman, pick your intersectionality. I commonly say in complete darkness, we are all the same. We are much more alike when we actually open up our mouth and share our stories. And so I want to get your view on that, because in telling your story or in telling, you are actually now sharing about yourself, but it's in a meaningful way to generate and garner connection with others.
Absolutely.
Go on.
So I think it comes from the way you do it and intention. Okay. Again, storytelling, fantastic skill. But storytelling doesn't inherently mean that the story is about you. And that's one of the key differences, right? I mentioned Malcolm Gladwell earlier. He revolutionized and completely changed modern nonfiction writing because he weaves stories into his entire book. And now that's the way all books are written. But very seldom are his or these other popular book stories about the author. Sometimes they are, but usually they actually highlight other people. In fact, if you go read Ryan Holiday's work, Ryan Holiday will tell stories about other people. There's actually fairly little about who Ryan is and his story. Does that make sense? Because again, it's about illustrating, well, what is the lesson? So is it really about you or the lesson? When the story is about you, to aggrandize you, then that's where you've gone wrong. If a story is about you, but there's a lesson and messaging that benefits everybody, great. But guess what? When you have someone who all they're ever telling is stories about themselves, and at some level or other, it's just self-aggrandizing. Does that make sense?
You helped me. You, it's when you said it's the intention. That's the piece there. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's the intention. And the other piece, I was just fascinated. So Camphor Pro, it was funny. I never really looked at it the way, like, again, just love the way you think. And I always see Camphor Pro more as a networking opportunity. And I believe I always say it, your network is your net worth. It's such a cliche. And it's never for that moment. And so I was going to ask you, if you reflect back to the time you've been at Camphor Pro, you may not have gone a client direct from the experience, but with a networking connection that you made there, do you have any proof point or experience where somewhere down the line, 1 year, 2 years, a client came forth because of a connection you made there?
Absolutely. So, I can think of one of many, but there was an event that I attended 1 year and then I was invited back to speak the next year. And at the second one where I was speaking, there was a attendee and she'd followed my media. So, you know, by her own admission, she was sort of excited to meet me. And so I met her, we hit it off, we became great friends. And what ended up happening was I realized that she was in this room thinking very wide-eyed and thinking she was a tiny fish in a big pond of very successful people. And as I learned more about her business and I explained to her, I was like, we're in a room full of a lot of these online coach types. And there's a lot of viable, credible people, but there's a lot of people who make a very big show of how they're doing. And they'll brag about, oh, my seven-figure business. Meanwhile, seven-figure expenses, seven-figure headaches, their margins, I don't know. And so I quickly realized that, no, between the two businesses, she's operating very well, and there's not a status-seeking bone in her body. She's absolutely one of the biggest players and most successful, smartest people in that room, whereas a lot of other people are putting out a lot of airs, right? So it took her a little bit to realize that. I introduced her to some key people, and she started to realize that the confidence explodes. But on one hand, I introduced her to her next business mentor, who's been very helpful to her. But I introduced her to another friend of mine who runs an event I'd spoken at, and she turned around and got a speaking invitation to appear at that event. Now, will that help her? Sure, but it's also fulfilling, but she's very clear on the fact that's not the path she really wants to chase. But along the way, she also, because she likes the way I operate as a coach, one of her team joined one of my online group women's programs. And then she actually hired me to do nutrition coaching for two of her team because A, she wanted to give them that support, and B, she actually wanted them to learn from my style of coaching. So yes, does that stuff happen? Sure. But it's not as direct as most people think. And it still works best if you are of abundant mindset, because I still approach that situation as what can I do for someone else? Not as how much can I extract from the situation? One of the easiest ways to do that is if you have your own house so in order that the opportunities are a byproduct of having your house sustainably in order, you're never in a desperate place where you have to aggressively try to squeeze as much out of a relationship as possible, because people sense that you're transactional very quickly.
You speak openly. You just said the word sustainability. And what do you mean specifically, or can you, and I know this is really like we have gone, and by the way, I want to, because I do want to wind down this episode. How much more time do I have of you?
You have 6 minutes with me, so I can answer your question here.
Okay.
Sustainably. So again, if you watch a lot of the business mentors in the fitness industry, and you'll notice all of a sudden, I'm shutting this business down. I'm like completely doing this new thing, whatever. And it's like, what's going on here? And then there's a lot of, again, I feel like the online coaching role is a bit of a bubble that was overblown in COVID. It's not going away, but I think many of the online coaches in the fitness industry aren't doing as well as they're letting on. And they all think they're the only one who's struggling. And a lot of them are struggling, right? And then AI is going to disrupt that whole thing, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole for time. But what I've seen in the industry is there are people who have sustainably and reliably built a great one-to-one training business in person, one-to-one training business online. They've built a sustainable platform that stands out in the industry that is still of great service. They've done well with brand. They're still they're great with the relationships to where they have their own house in order. And that can take a lot of different forms. Mm-hmm. It's just the problem is I think a lot of people do not have their house in order. Mm-hmm. And then if you have your house in order, it's very easy to say yes to thoughtful opportunities that are fulfilling instead of chasing them because you feel like you need these opportunities to drive your business success. And I just think it's a much better focus to make sure you're crushing it on taking care of the person in front of you than to chase the approval and status within an industry that, yes, there are rewards. They're nowhere near what people think they are. It's the wrong path to chase.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay, I'm going to take you through my rapid thrivers. There might be a part two. We do men's health in the month of November. I think where we can actually focus on. When you think of someone who inspires you, who comes first to mind and why?
I struggle with this one because I think I don't thrive on inspiration. Hmm. It goes back to the way we started. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm very wired to just show up and take care of people all the time. So my default settings run pretty high, and sometimes you're motivated by certain things. Mm-hmm. I'll give a good shout to my friend Luca Hosovar. He also spoke at the Canfit Pro that year as well. Luca's big energy. He has his own house in order. He's been getting a lot of opportunity in the industry. And, anytime I don't have a lot of energy, I'll look at Luca and like, I know I got another gear because this guy doesn't slow down. So he's the best answer I have. Yeah. So go follow him, Luca Hosovar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Daily activity that helps you with your thrive?
Again, nailing the routine of my sleep opportunity, 8 hours a night is non-negotiable. I don't fuck with that.
Seriously? Meals, you get 8 every night?
Every night. Right? And now I said sleep opportunity. It doesn't mean I always, I sleep well, but I create the boundary and very important.
Sleep opportunity.
It's a very, very framed very carefully because if I don't give myself that opportunity, I cannot theoretically have the best sleep. So it's non-negotiable, okay? I don't fuck around with it. My meals, everything is generally on lockdown. I've hired a meal prep service, which became a sponsor, which I love because, it's easier for me to focus on work and have these meals convenient and they're nutritious versus, the extra time cooking. Not everybody has that luxury. Mm-hmm. It's just something that has a high value proposition for me.
I think more people should tap into meal prep. I do. I travel for work. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have a prep service. But anyway.
Totally.
Yeah. Book that is, I see books behind you. Book that has helped you to thrive. Notable one.
I think we're always framed. We're always influenced by the books we find early in our journey, and a lot of them share a lot of similar ideas. There are two main directions to take this. I think Ryan Holiday's The Obstacle is the Way is a classic. It's just a classic mindset book. I think Atomic Habits by James Clear, you can do no wrong with that one. It's just so good. So instead of going into a list of 10 others, let's start with those.
That was just one. What is an app on your phone that that you use every day that helps you with your productivity or your thrive?
All right, I'm going to throw a few because now I'm cheating because I got a couple sponsors, so I'm going to shout them out. But okay, I used them before. I mean, RP Strength is one of my sponsors. So their RP Hypertrophy app is what I use for my training. I know the team, I love them. Macros First is my preferred tracking app. I know Jacob, the owner, as well. He's incredible. I've used it for tracking before it became a sponsor for me. And I like Audible. I like audiobooks, and that's when I'm driving, and the less cooking that I do, but the cooking or something else that's sort of automated but doesn't require all my focus, it's a way that I accelerate my learning and information consumption.
Yeah. And last but not least, what is one misconception that people have of you?
I've heard a lot that I am intimidating and serious, and
sorry,
I get, again, the people that get the opportunity to kind of get to know me a little bit, they tend to see through that one, right? So I mean, it's contextual, you know.
Am if I allowed to tell a story?
I don't think we have time, but okay, tell your story, then I gotta go.
One second. So my opening question to y'all at the panel, because remember I was standing, you were sitting right beside me. I asked the question, and my intention was that this would be my way to introduce everybody. And the question came to you, and you're like, I think we've done this one enough. Like, can we move? You pretty much said, can we move on to the next one? Miss, I don't know how to moderate a panel. I was like, whoa, who the heck is this guy? I was so intimidated for a second.
That's going to sound terrible in context. So obviously, and I don't quite remember it, but I have a funny thing with panels, and I tend to bias. So it goes back to everything we were talking about. I tend to read the audience very carefully. Yes, and so I always try to steer it so that way it's like got them engaged. Yes. And you were wonderful, by the way. I had a moderator another time that he tried to do, 60-70% of the talking, and he was actually not doing anything to draw out the other panel members, in particular the women on the panel, and I was starting to get really fucking pissed off with this guy. So I may have a bug up my ass about
that. That's okay. I got over it real quick, and we became friends.
You're great.
So thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. And this is, this is where I have to say, we're out. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning in to the Empowered in My Skin podcast. If today's conversation resonated with you, please take a moment to share this episode, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an empowering conversation. And remember, empowered humans empower humans. Until next time, I'm your girl, and I'm out.